When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? You some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Friends, fans, followers, leaders, and true believers, I'm here with
Will Burns,
a good buddy of mine. We've been kicking around the idea of doing a podcast together because we're both veterans, and you guys already know my story because you've been listening for a while. But Will, tell me a little bit about where you were, man.
Where I was?
Yeah, like military. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I signed up in New York City, Manhattan. And from there, I got sent a couple months later to basic training because I was still in school when I signed up. So the next available date for me wasn't until August. So basically I just had to stay out of trouble till August.
So a good old delayed entry program.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't smoke weed.
Don't get in trouble.
Don't steal a car.
So I basically just waited it out. And then in August I went down to Fort Benning, Georgia for basic, which is where they send anyone who's going infantry, which is where I went.
So you're an infantryman?
An infantryman.
What was Fort Benning like? What was boot camp like, man?
It wasn't what I expected. Say that some of it was, of course, you know, like the second you're off the bus, they're screaming at you and you're holding your bag over your head and stuff. And, you know, like you're not allowed to speak for a while, you know, and it was just like, and then it was just like stupid things. Like you can't, they give you those tall socks, you can't push them down.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like, you haven't earned that yet. I'm like, I haven't earned pushing socks down. What does that even mean?
It's funny. Cause I was like asking different veterans what they thought of boot camp, because everybody, like all civilians have this thing, like seeing Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
They automatically think that it's just hell.
Right.
But everybody else is just like, oh, it was a joke.
Like but that's the thing, is you go in thinking it's going to be like this big horror story or something. And then when you see that it's actually not that, it's just like, well, that was a lot easier than I thought. Not easier, but like not as intense as I thought it was going to be. But also it's the times, you know?
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, back in the 70s and maybe early 80s, you know, they were allowed to get away with a lot more.
Yeah, and grab now, you by the chin.
Yeah, they could grab you, they could knock you around a little bit maybe if they had to. But, you know, you're not allowed to do that stuff anymore. And, like, some of them are at the point where they have, like, stress cards. I wasn't in for that. I wouldn't have used one if I had it. But apparently you could just, if you feel like you're being stressed out too much, you can give them this card and they have to stop or something.
That is funny. Like in the last episode, I had Derek Schmitty, a buddy of mine. He's actually my first crew leader. And he, somebody pulled on him on a project site, a construction project site in Okinawa. You know, so, like, it's actually like the episode before this one. It's funny you said that.
That's
about
hilarious.
The stress card, man. What was probably the funniest like shit that happened to you in boot camp or to somebody you've seen?
In boot camp, I'd say the funniest thing was this day they took us to a fair. And
had an affair.
Yeah, I had an affair. No, so they take us to this fair, and you know, they got all the games and stuff, and one of them was where you throw darts at the balloons and you can win a poster. And I don't even think there was balloons. I think you just had to hit the poster you wanted.
Right.
It was like the easiest game ever, you know? So you got, like, you know, hot girl on motorcycle, this and that, you know. But then they got to have ones for the ladies, you know. So there was this one of this guy, like, looked like a 70s porn star. Had this mustache, the hair, and just wrapped a towel around him. And that was the poster. And so I'm like, yo, we should get this and give it to the drill sergeant. So this kid kind of's like, I'll do it. So he walks up, throws it right at it, and everybody starts laughing, like, don't ask, don't tell, man. And the guy looks at him, he's laughing, he goes, okay, but which one did you really want? Kind of just straight looks at him, that is the one I want. But then it backfired on us because we did give it to him. And he goes, man, thank you guys so much. I love it so much. I'm going to put it right here on the outside of my door so you guys can look at it every day. Anybody takes this down, you're getting smoked for the rest of the... Like, so basically, we had to look at it for the rest of boot.
That's funny because you just made boot camp look like a big carnival. Like, that's it. Like, we didn't shoot guns, dude. We just threw darts and shit, you know?
Well, it was just that one day. No, we shot plenty of guns.
I just liked meeting people from different walks of life and these weird names. We had this one kid. His last name was Gross Peter. So I was, you know,
that's hilarious. Oh, poor kid when he was small. Gross Peter. That couldn't have been easy growing up.
Are you named after a box circumcision?
I think the funniest one was a Jamaican kid, like from Jamaica, and his last name was German.
What was it, Mini Hitler or something?
Yeah, I don't know. And then we had another kid named St. Louis.
Yeah, he ended up having a lucrative career in hockey, though. He played for Tampa Bay. Yeah,
different St. Louis, but
yeah, retired from the Rangers. That guy. Oh shit, man. So where'd you go after boot camp, man?
Actually, when I was signing up, one little side note, I'm Korean and Irish.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know.
Whiskey and soju. Fuck yeah, man.
Well, what happened was, before I signed up or anything, my parents had been talking about this trip to Korea.
Right.
That they wanted to make. And then, so when I was signing up, they said, look, when you get out of basic, you can either stay at Fort Benning, go to Fort Hood, or you could go to Korea.
Ugh.
And I was, you know, I had never been. I've always wanted to. They were going to take me on this trip, right. And I was like, hands down, Korea. So after I did it all, I went home, and I was like, look, you don't have to pay for me to go on that trip. I'll already be there.
Right.
So yeah, I went over there for a year, and I drove for about half of that. I drove Bradley. I came in and was assigned as a dismount in a mechanized unit, 1-9 out of. Camp Hovey, which is connected to Camp Casey, which is where the tankers were stationed. And so I was first in as a dismount saw gunner,
right,
M249, and then they made me take a bunch of us take a driver's test, and I was like the first one done because I thought it was just a formality. And next thing I knew, I was a Bradley driver, which sounded awesome at first, really fun to drive.
Yeah,
but then all the maintenance you got to do. And just when everybody else gets off work, all these other guys, they go and start partying. We're all the drivers. We're like under there kicking mud off
clean
there
every
and like just everything
out and shit.
And it's just so what happened was we eventually we came in on a Friday night. We were supposed to be done, but one of the Bradleys broke down, so mine had to go back to tow it back in. And to tow it, you got to use a tow bar, which is basically like two metal bars joined on one end that hinge out. And you connect one end to one to the other, and off you go. But it weighs about 500 pounds. So as we're pulling it off, lands on my foot, almost lose my big toe.
Jesus Christ.
And get back, whatever. And so once I was healed up, I was like, look, I don't want to be a driver anymore. I want to be a dismount. So I spent the rest of my time as a dismount. After that year, I got stationed at Fort Drum, New York.
What's dismount mean? What's that mean?
It means it's a mechanized unit. So basically there's the Bradley crew, which is three people, the driver, the TC, transport commander, or whatever the T stands for.
Yeah, we call them vehicle commanders.
Yeah,
you got
truck
like,
commander. Yeah. And then you got the gunner,
right,
who's up there with him. Well, everybody else that's like down in the back, sitting down, those are the dismounts. So basically whenever the driver gets to the spot, he opens up the back hatch. These guys go running out, hence dismount.
Right.
And they go do the job while the driver circles around to the pickup point. So they'll go through, do the job, cut through the rest of the way, and jump into the back, and off you go. That was much more satisfying for me because that's, like, what I signed up for, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then, I don't want to have an accident there. Sorry. After a year, I came back to the States and I got stationed at Fort Drum, New York, which is where I basically finished out my time.
Okay.
I was supposed to be there until 2006, August 2006, that I went in 2002. But instead I got stop lost and I ended up getting out October 2007. No, I did the year in Korea and my parents did come out that week and I got to hang out with them and they actually met Wayne Newton, which was pretty cool. They were staying in the same hotel. Wait, where were we?
Let's see here. You went through...
Oh, so yeah. I did my year in Korea. That was in Korea.
Yeah. You fucked up your foot. You went to dismount. You went from dismount, and then you went to
Korea. I got stationed at Fort. No, that was all in Korea.
Oh, that was all that happened in Korea.
Yeah,
oh,
all that happened in Korea. But yeah, then I went to Fort Drum, New York, which basically I deployed out of there to Iraq twice. So I was there. I got there January. Like I got in and like I got there in December, but I wasn't fully signed in and assigned to a unit until like in a bit into January. So then come next June, that June, I was sent to Iraq for the first time.
Right.
So I did a year there, and that was just the worst one, because that, like, literally, Baghdad, Sadr City, like, all the worst places you could think of, that's where I was going, like, for, like, 3-4 months at a time. It was the, like, we lost a lot of guys, my unit.
Yeah. What unit were you with at that time?
That was with Bravo Company, 214th Infantry, 3rd Platoon.
So you guys, like, so what's a tank driver do, like, just when you're over there then?
Well, right. At that point, I was just straight infantry.
Oh, so, okay, so you weren't fucking with tanks at all.
No, that was only in Korea.
Oh, okay,
cool. I don't know why, I signed up as infantry, and it was technically an infantry unit.
Yeah.
But it was a mechanized unit, so we had Bradleys.
Oh, that's okay.
But yeah, so when I got back to the States and I went to Fort Drum, I was in a straight infantry unit.
Gotcha.
So literally just a grunt, like ground soldier, mostly on foot. We had Humvees.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time driving Humvees over there.
I was on the other side. I was in fucking
like Fallujah. By the end of that first tour, yeah. On top of the Bradley and everything else, I was licensed to drive so many different military vehicles.
Right.
I was driving deuce and a halfs. Like, I drove just about any truck. I didn't drive a Striker or anything like that. They were like just coming out. So I never got to get into doing that. But yeah, mostly for us it was Humvees. Unless like they brought in a Bradley crew like one time for a mission and we were going to dismount, but then that mission got called off.
Yeah, it's fucked up, cuz like Humvees were like a great idea at first, and after shit started going down, they're like, whoa, whoa. And then we had to keep upgrading all the Humvees.
Right.
My job being a steel worker, like, I would always make more things for the armor and stuff like that. And so we went operating vehicles.
See, that was the worst thing about my first tour, was we were actually the last unit to do this, because the one after us refused.
Right.
And they were like, okay. And I was like, well, you could have refused? And like, but like, we didn't even really think about it.
Right.
You know, the thought of refusing was never there. But we also didn't really, because this is, for most of us, our first time over there in this kind of situation. I don't think that at the time, because it hadn't come down yet, we didn't really grasp the violence and the danger of the situation that they were putting us in.
Nobody realizes how much shit.
Well, here's the thing, is when we got to Kuwait, where, you know, you have to go to Kuwait to acclimate, get used to the temperature and all that.
Re-zero
your weapons because of the change of temperature, which is how I ended up driving a bus. Because I had to take people back and forth to the range. So, but I never minded it. You know, it gave me some time to just, like, you know, just get into my own head. I didn't have, like, I had one other guy from my unit with me, you know. Everyone else was from the other units. So I didn't have to talk to them. It was great. But yeah, so we're in Kuwait, and basically what they tell us is you're driving from Kuwait to Iraq in Humvees.
Right.
And they go, here's your Humvees. And they got, it's like the plastic doors. And, you know, like no armor, no, the windows are just the regular windows, you know.
That's my generation
and
kill.
And we get there and we're like, what the fuck, you know? And basically they go, yeah, these are your Humvees, but don't worry.
Yeah.
So now we got to go down. We got a bunch of guys. We basically give you a piece of wood, and you go up to a piece of sheet metal, and you trace the wood and the holes. And then these guys will probably, what your unit was, would cut them out, right? And then give them to us. And then, like, you'd have to go to this this yard in the back where they had basically just taken all kinds of stuff and just thrown it into a big ditch. And so you got to go in and just find matching bolts and nuts and washers and stuff that'll fit to hold these doors on, to hold the metal on the doors.
Right.
On top of that, it's like literally a garbage pit, pretty much, of metal.
Yeah.
In this ditch, and it's nighttime. You're using one of those little, just push it in with your thumb, tiny little red lights. You know, the clip on. And there's scorpions and shit, so that wasn't fun. There was a lot of scorpions. So then the other part of that is that you're bolting them on to these plastic doors of the Humvees. And the problem with that is that the plastic doors, the hinges are made to accommodate the plastic door.
Right.
So every time that door opens,
the weight
is pulling on the hinges, exactly. And so by the time, and it was like a 4-day trip. So, and we didn't realize this. This is the other part we didn't know. We weren't told, like, the specific route, the specificities of the route.
Right.
So we went through the cloverleaf. And by the time we're going through the cloverleaf, I didn't have a door. And like, I didn't know it, you know? And, like I didn't know I was going through, like, these, the worst parts, you know? And then we get there, and they give us up-armored Humvees. Like, fully done up, you know? I think the... Oh, and the gunners didn't have shields.
Yeah.
In the turrets on the way over. So that was another one, you know?
If you watch, what is it, Generation Kill, you can actually see, like, a lot of that shit.
I mean, yeah.
That was one of the things I did, too, is because, like, you didn't have enough lights on the vehicles and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I took angle iron and square tubing, and I made a shit ton. Oh, people would send home for their mom, be like, hey, man, can you send me some, they'd send us KC lights and all this other stuff, and we're fabricating everything, man. That was my shop did a lot for the western part of Iraq. So it was pretty fucking crazy, man. You know, like, you're talking about, The licenses and stuff like that. Uh-huh. I was going through a job interview. I was bored, you know, being a stand-up comic. I wake up at 4 in the afternoon. I'm like, I need a fucking reason to get up in the morning. So I went over to, they were like talking about, KLOS was talking about having a casting call. So just for people to work on the street team. So I was like, okay, fuck it. I'll do that, right?
Right.
And then I was sitting down in a job interview, and the guy's like, hey, I see you're in the military. Do you mind driving big trucks? And I'm like, I don't mind it. I don't really like it,
right. But
I'll do it. And they're like, well, we got this RV out front. And I'm like, you're calling an RV a big truck, dude? Are you serious? Well, I can do that in my sleep.
Right.
Like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah.
No, literally,
yeah.
I've fallen asleep doing it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't add that to it, but you know exactly.
It's so easy to fall
asleep while you're driving.
In Kuwait, I did fall asleep driving a Humvee.
Oh, yeah?
And my platoon sergeant was sitting right next to me. That made it even worse. And basically, the only way he knew was because I had the iPro blocking, yeah. Right? What happened was there was a turn, and I didn't.
Like,
so
shit.
He's yelling at me. I wake up, and I look over, and all the other trucks are over there.
Oh, it was a convoy strength, so you're like fucking...
Yeah, yeah. But my funniest thing about that, the license I had with all those vehicles on it was, like I said, that one time my unit had Bradley's attached to us. And while the mission got called off, we did go to the waypoint in the Bradleys. And so we're sitting there, the back hatches of the Bradleys are down, we're all sitting there eating MREs on the back, but before all that, we're sitting there, we get there, and the Bradleys are there, and all the guys are like all excited, you know, they're climbing around on it, you know, having a good time, and I'm just sitting there like watching.
Yeah.
And my platoon sergeant comes over, he's like, what's up, Byrne, you're not excited about this? I was like, no, I'm not. And he's like, why not? I'm like, first of all, You feel how hot it is out here? I know what it's going to be like in there when they close it up.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And I was like, second of all, I can get in there and drive that right now if I wanted to. That hatch is open. You don't need keys. I'm like, I could literally get in there and start driving that right now. I know how. And he's like, no, you don't. You don't know how to drive. I'm like, sorry, I drove a Bradley for... Why? This is not my first unit.
Yeah.
Why do you keep thinking this is my first unit? I've told you many times. This is not my first unit. I'm like, I have a license to show you. I can drive a Bradley. He's like, man, you ain't got no license. I was like, okay, here. And I
put
pulled
some
it
money
out,
on that shit.
And I put it in his hand. He goes, God damn, you license to drive a Bradley? I'm like, why do you constantly doubt me?
Yeah.
When I say these things, I don't lie to you. But the real downside to actually driving it is where, I don't know what, but the shifter, any Bradley driver will tell you, that shifter, they call it Bradley bites. Because that whole area, it doesn't look like it, but like little bits of metal that just catch your hand constantly. So every time you come back, there's just like, and like every time you're reaching in to do something, so there's just like little nicks and cuts all over your hand when you come back.
Yeah, we had Beretta bites, but that's a total other thing. We'd actually, I know it sounds bad, but you'd every once in a while you get a shitty person, being a range coach, you get a shitty person online, and you're like, fuck that guy, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to tell him anymore. I'm just going to tell him how to shoot. He's a fucking expert. Knows everything. So, all right, I bet you $5 he fucking cuts his hand.
Right.
You know, and you're like, and then it's sad because you actually are hoping somebody cuts their hand. It's not like going to kill them or anything, but it's going to make sure that they learn their lesson that you're trying to tell them. It's like the whole kid thing. Like a kid standing up underneath the table. You're just sick of telling the kid to quit standing up on the table.
And eventually he hits his head on the table.
And then, oh, that gets
there. Like, that's why I tell you not to be end of the table.
Told you so, motherfucker.
Exactly. Well, that's when you get to that point. I told you so.
That's it.
I'm not going to cry about it. No, no, no. Go to your mom with that.
So, it was like, I know fucking Iraq. What did you bring back from Iraq mentally? I mean, was it pretty cool or shitty? Or
I mean,
it's a mixture of everything, you know.
I mean, of course, you know, like, it's shitty, you know. You know, I am diagnosed with PTSD, and a lot of that is, like, you know, I brought back with me, you know. You know, I watched a lot of guys go down.
Yeah.
Friends, you know, brothers go down. It was rough. And, you know, but on the other hand, you know, there's also a lot of laughter and humor because these guys are like your brothers, you know. Yeah. And you're just with each other all day, every day. And, you know, if you're in a situation like that, it can't just be nothing but serious and go, like, when you have downtime, you got to make it fun. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're going to go crazy if you don't.
It's the complete opposite of trying to figure out doing 5 and 3 fives, man.
Exactly. So I was like, I was the one who was always like pulling pranks and stuff, you know, just messing with everyone, you know, especially my that first year, my platoon sergeant.
Uh-huh.
Just so easy to mess with, and I would just take it to extremes. So, like, I mean, we had a love-hate relationship, you know? Like, I loved to fuck with him, and he loved to throw shit at me.
He loved to hate you?
He did love to hate me. He loved to hate me so much. Yeah, I mean, for every time we've gotten into it, you know, like, but, you know, in those extreme situations, it's like, but you're the one who told us if we had a problem with something to say it.
Yeah.
And now that I say it, you're making it like I'm being insubordinate. I'm like, you gotta decide, you know, like, do you want to hear what we have to say, or do you just want to say that and for us to shut the fuck up? Because I think it's the latter.
Yeah, it's like, do as I say, not as I do. Don't say shit. Don't say it. No, don't say
it. Don't say it.
I was like, you know, when you're doing inspections, I always thought it was funny because, like, how are you doing today? And everybody's supposed to stay outstanding. I'm like, right. I'm kind of cold and hungry, man. Well, Brian, what's your problem?
I think my favorite thing about an inspection was we were in Korea, and we were having this, like, the battalion leader was coming down to do inspections. And me and my roommate, to mess with him, we had wall lockers separating our space.
Yeah.
And so we pulled the wall lockers out and put them against either side of the room, and we pushed our beds together and put, like, one blanket on top. And we each had a stuffed animal that, like, the girl we were with had given us.
Yeah.
So we put those on top of the pillows, so it looks like that's how we slept. And he came in, and he looked around, and, you know, we come in, we're like, attention, and he's like, at ease, and, like, and he looks around, he looks at the bed, he looks around, and, like, the only reason we didn't really get anything about it was, like, these little guys, the Gundam Wing models.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of those, like, bigger, like, big Gundam Wing models, and apparently his son was so into them. And he's like, whose are these? And we're like, well, it's kind of both of us.
And he's like, all, like, oh, knows them by name.
Yeah,
and
all of a sudden, like, it didn't matter that he knew we were just messing around. Yeah. It didn't matter. But my favorite one was, he goes up to the floor above us, and my buddy Doherty, because you also have to have that perfect uniform, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my buddy Doherty's standing there, perfect uniform, nice and crisp, and guy's talking to him, and then he looks down and goes, Doherty? He says, yes. He goes, why does your shirt have an why does your name tag have an exclamation point at the end of it? And he says, well, that's how everybody says my name, so I figured that's how I should put it on there.
Oh, shit.
This guy was constantly getting yelled at. Like, nobody was ever like, hey, Doherty, you there? You know, it was like, Doherty!
Oh, we had Rex Roth! We had Rex Roth.
Then. Oh, okay.
We had Matt,
every right. unit has one.
Yeah, yeah.
Every
Matt Chief Stanley, you can just always hear him like, Rex Roth! Rex Roth! You hear him screaming through a fucking...
Like,
yeah, it's just like the two syllables, man.
Yeah.
Rex Roth! Doherty!
The worst one was getting in trouble in basic for the first, because he ended up not making it through and getting recycled. But the first couple months of basic, it really sucked if you got in trouble, because for those of you who don't know, you're assigned a battle buddy. So basically, if one of you gets in trouble, both of you are in trouble, whether you were involved or even there. And yeah. So it was, you know, I don't know if you were paying attention at the beginning, but my last name is Byrne. His last name was Cox. And so when they called, it was COX. And when they would call us, it was just, Burning Cox! Sounds like Burning Cox.
Yeah.
So that wasn't fun.
Burning Cox.
Burning Cox.
too. Like, it was talking about the gun guys, dude. Yeah. It's like, it's funny how, like, cartoon shit can carry over into the military. Yeah.
It's sick.
I was in 400 Liggett digging fighting positions. We're digging foxholes, you know, whatever you want to call them back then. Now fighting positions, politically correct. But we're fucking digging.
It's amazing that something like that, it has to be politically correct. Oh, well, dude, foxes take offense to that. It's like,
Are you kidding me? They just got rid of every name that ends with man in the Navy.
It's just ridiculous that, like, how politically correct everyone is that we have to, like, you know, change stupid terms like foxhole.
Well, like, the Navy went away from rights. They don't have rights now. They have, like, you know, the Army and Marines have MOSs. The Navy has NOSs now. It's like, you know, Navy operational fucking, you know. So that's your, yeah. And that's a whole nother can of worms. It's fucking,
right.
I think it's bullshit, but. I know that's a big rabbit hole I don't want to get into.
I'm not one of the guys sitting at the big table, so.
Yeah, it's out of my hands.
It's out of my hands.
But going back to the cartoon thing, transforming into the military side of the house is.
Oh, I love Transformers.
Yes, exactly. So me and Optimus Prime were digging. It was me and the Constructicons. Devastator were out there digging shit. Digging a fighting position, I was a squad leader at the time. It's my second battalion as a NMCB4 out of Port Hueneme. We're up at 400 Liggett doing digging fighting positions, foxholes, whatever. And I was like, you know what? It'd be a lot easier instead of us doing, you know, you do a fire team, like split your fire team in half. So two guys are digging a fighting position here, two guys are sticking. Instead of doing that, let's just all dig one hole at a time. You know what I mean? Because it's just fucking, let's just get this knocked out so we can get this done.
Yeah, it's a lot
easier.
And
you trade in and trade out so you maximize your productivity. You know,
smarter, not harder.
Exactly. And I'm thinking on everybody's answers on construction sites is throw more bodies at it. Throw more bodies at it and it'll get done faster, which is bullshit. Because then you have more people stepping on each other's sticks.
Trying to do one thing, yeah.
So I'm digging. Even as a squad leader, I'm giving a fuck, man. I'm digging. And I'm like, how's it going to work? Teamwork. How's it going to work? Teamwork. Now, I just got added to this as their squad leader, so I knew them, but I didn't know them.
Right.
We knew each other. We knew of each other, but we didn't know each other.
Gotcha.
And it was funny because by the time we got, I don't know, about not even two bars into that song, everybody's singing along. We all got kids about the same age, you know? So we're like, how's it gonna work? Teamwork. Then we're singing Backyardigan songs, and we're singing all this other stupid shit. And then... Yeah, by the time we got done with that field exercise, all our kids were playing with each other.
That's hilarious. See, I don't have kids.
Yeah.
That fucking 13-year-old that showed up here yesterday is a fucking liar.
Yeah.
I don't know where that... He's fishing for something, but not me. I'll get a DNA test tomorrow. I'll go on Maury Povich.
I'm kidding about that.
But it's funny to, you know, go... I have my niece and nephew, my brother's kids, that live real close. Well, not real close, but close enough that I could see them often.
Right.
And, It's so funny to me, you know, because he's my brother, you know, so like to be in a car and him and his daughter are having a singing competition to see who could sing the theme song to Sophia the First better. And like, I've seen the show once or twice because, you know, that's what she wants to do. I'm going to do what she wants to do, you know, so like, but I, of course, you know, I'm not her dad, so I don't have it memorized.
Right.
Which I'm sure if I was and I've had to see it that many times, I'd know it too. You know, and I'm sure it's a short song because there's a little kid's show.
Well, there's shitty things too. Like every parent will tell you, like I don't really have any kids of my own, but I raised this chick.
Right.
This chick's daughter for like 10 years. And then,
then she became like your daughter.
Yeah, she's just like my kid. And like the Elmo song, like, Elmo's talk. I could sing Elmo's talk.
Even with the voice.
Oh, dude, yeah, exactly. And then you get so in tune with that. And I don't know if I ever had to hear bridge, fountain, waterfall one more fucking time from Dora the Explorer. Because it's not like an episode. It's not like a show itself. It's the one episode.
Dude, that was the one thing that... one thing people hate about me in the Army, because I just thought it was hilarious, was whenever I get invited to someone's kid's birthday, because I don't have kids, they can never get me back.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that shows up with the most obnoxious, loud toy that makes the most noise, and the kid loves it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, and don't worry, you will never run out of batteries.
I got
the big pack of batteries. I'm like, you're good. And the parents are always just looking at me like, thanks, Will.
Yeah, Thanks. If you got something you don't like, buy him a Bop It.
Or a drum set.
Or recorders are awesome, too. People are going to hate us after they can listen to shit.
Oh, man,
or they're going to love us because of the ideas.
One of them for my niece's birthday got her an accordion.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, well, we got to get the batteries for it. And I'm looking at it, and I go, oh, no, you don't need batteries. Look. Like, thanks, Will. Oh, anytime.
So I'm here for you, man.
I'm here to help, you know?
We're here to help. Everything short of support.
I was that guy, though.
Fucking, that's one thing I miss about, like, I miss the camaraderie and the family. The family you feel from the military.
Yeah, of course.
Like, a lot of people warned me. Sean Halpin big time warned me about what it's going to be like when you walk away. You know, like...
At first, it was, to me, fuck yeah, dude. You know, yes. Like, I had worked, like, because, okay, here's the thing, is, like, I got back from my second tour of Iraq, literally Halloween Day 2007, in that morning. Like, I didn't even realize it until kids came to my door asking for candy, and I had to, like, run around and try to find some.
Right.
I didn't even think that might happen, you know? So, a couple days later, I go into that, you know, you go into that room with everybody else that's about to clear to get out. And it's like, you know, at least 100 people in this room. Instructors come in, they go, all right, who's trying to get out to make it in home in time for Christmas? And all these hands go up, and they're like, not going to fucking happen. And everybody starts laughing. Then they go, who's trying to get out a different day? Two hands go up, front and center, me and my best friend.
Yeah.
And they go, when are you trying to get out? And we're like, well, we're going to get out December 1st. And everybody starts laughing at us. Like, did you not just hear what we told them? And we're like, oh, no, we're going to do it. Yeah. We signed out December 1st. This guy. I hustled that system, you know? And then, so me and him signed out December 1st. And first, I'm like, happy as shit. I'm driving. But then I'm in, almost a blizzard. Snow's going south. I had to pull over until the semi came through.
Where was this?
This was coming from... I was going from Fort Drum, New York to... Which is, like, almost to Canada.
Yeah.
45 minutes south of Ontario, Canada. Down to New York City. And I'm maybe, like, an hour or so into, like, a four-hour drive. Snow's going sideways. I'm getting dizzy. I ended up on the other side of the highway. Yeah. And it was so late at night, no one else was on the road. And then the next thing I know, I figured it out. I backed back through the thing, and I kept going. But then I started getting dizzy, and so I just pulled over and waited for a semi to come and just rode right behind that guy until I got to where it was, like, you know, kind of good.
Yeah.
And then I took off. But, yeah, man, that was a pretty crazy trip going out of there. But, I was so happy to be gone and so happy to be out and free, you know, and, like, I'm on my way to California and this and that. Yeah. And as I'm working my way south and west, it's getting warmer and warmer. And I'm loving it. And, you know, I didn't come straight through. Like, I made a lot of stops, stayed places for a couple days visiting people. And then I get here and literally I got a job, started working at this Army-Navy store in Burbank, had an apartment, and I'd come home from work and literally just my fridge was just full of beer.
Yeah.
Like, beer and steak was pretty much what was in my fridge. And I would just come home and just sit there and just drink. And it was just, literally just get sucked up into myself. And, like, yeah, that was the biggest part of it, was that, like, I didn't have that community anymore. It was like, weird. I mean, when you're there, especially when you're at, like, one unit for so many years.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's like, you're just with these guys, like, that whole time. It's like, you're literally, like, you do everything together. Like maybe once in a while you go out with your lady for a dinner, just the two of you. But for the most part, when you go out to do stuff, I mean, there's only so many places to go do stuff at. So you can go to any, and pretty much, like, part of your unit will be there, you know? Or, like, you plan it all together, you know? Like, pretty much any Friday night, you're all going out together. Your team, your squad, whatever.
Well, and the thing is, too, is you live with each other, so you're so used to each other's idiosyncrasies.
Exactly.
You know? And you see each other's face every single day. And then, you literally have to, like, the military, when you're in there, it dictates your entire life. And then you go from that. It's like, I think it feels like a rape relationship, or, like, with an abusive relationship.
Right.
With a little bit of codependency going on. You're like, you know... But it really wasn't all that abusive. It was just a fucking, yeah, I can't wait to get away from this bitch.
It was bad, you know?
Fuck her, dude.
Yeah.
You know? And then, like,
this fucking bitch.
And then you're like, God damn.
I miss that bitch. Right?
You know?
I miss that bitch. I ain't gonna lie. No, it's so true. And literally, like, there was times, you know, the first, like, maybe year and a half, 2 years after I got out, where I was literally, like, I would call this one guy and I'd be like, dude, I'm going back.
Yeah.
I'm just going back. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, dude, I'm talking about going back. And he's like, why? I'm like, because I don't know what to do out here. Like, I don't know what, like, there, I wake up, I know exactly what I'm doing that day.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on the run, or I'm going to go to the gym, you know, whatever. Then I'm going to go to this formation. Then I'm going to do this. Then I'm going to go to this formation, whatever. You know, I know what I'm doing. Out here, I'm fucking lost, you know? And then he'd be like, okay, but think about when this and this and this and this and this went down. I'd be like, okay, good talk,
oh,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, good talk, man. All right, thank you, bro. Yeah. I'm not going back. Don't worry about it.
So did you have to, like, did you go through to the VA, or did you seek any help out from that kind of shit? Or
I've gone to the VA, but not for any mental issues or anything. Yeah. I have gone to the VA for other stuff, medical issues and whatnot, not severe, but you know, and I've not had a bad experience with the VA. They've actually taken care of me pretty well.
Which one do you use, though?
I use the one in LA.
Cool.
The one right down there off Wilshire.
Okay.
They offered me that other one that they put up, but I was just like, you know what, I'm good there. So I haven't had any problems there. I've always gotten whatever I needed. So, you know, that was good, but I didn't seek anything, but, I did, there's this man named, Shad Meshad, and I met him. What's that? Thank you. I met him through, Dan Loria, actually, who, was... Dan Loria, you know. So Dan is actually a veteran. He's a Navy veteran. He's been a guest on my podcast, Military Moments, which you've also been a guest on. For those of you who don't know it, Military Moments, it will be coming back with Josh here as my co-host.
It's going
to
be awesome.
So very much looking forward to getting that going again. So Dan had, I was talking to him about some of this stuff, and he had given me this man's number, and I went and met with him. And I'd gone out there quite a few times to meet with him, and he helped me incredibly. There was stuff I just could not stop thinking about.
Yeah.
And I went and saw him, and, like, slowly here and there, like, I'd think about it less, and I'd think about
stuff,
it less.
You mean, like, shit that happened while you were in the desert?
Yeah,
that
like
kind
shit,
of stuff?
Like, not... shit that, like, I don't have these kind of dreams as much anymore, okay. You know? Gotcha. I don't have, like, stuff like that. I don't see something, and it just... brings back a memory of something shitty, you know, like it still happens,
right.
But it doesn't happen as often, and it's not at the forefront of my thoughts like every day.
Yeah.
Like it used to be. Like it was just right there, and like I could barely find it. I couldn't talk to people because I was afraid I was just gonna like all this stuff that like you wouldn't. Okay, here's the thing. When you're in and you have that brotherhood, but you're also in these fucked up situations, your vernacular and the things you talk about are not things that people talk about in what quote unquote normal society.
I think that's why I'm a comic, dude.
And
I'm
so that, I mean, because, that's the outlet to use, you know, because you could just kind of talk without a filter. But when you're like, you know, trying to meet someone or like you just started taking classes and you're getting to know your classmates, it's, you got to really reel back. And so it makes you feel like you're reeling back so much that you almost can't talk. You know, and
exactly.
And that was another big issue. And so that helped a lot with that as well.
Yeah.
To just, you know, I'm more comfortable in social. And I was always a very social person. And so for that to be stifled was very, very strange for me.
Yeah. And the thing, I think a lot of it too is when you're in, it's kind of like chemicals. It's like, oh, you know what? It's like pulpy orange juice, you know, because it's always being shaken. You
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then like... And it's like, we're like pulpy orange juice. And then if you ever seen orange juice that sat on a counter too long,
it's
and it's
all
like all
the
shit
bottom.
Settled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like how we think and our thoughts
right.
are, because we don't really think about all that shit. But then you're by yourself and you're no longer in the mix anymore. Like literally, you're no longer in that mix. And then everything's like, oh shit, literally settling down. What the fuck, man? Because we all seen some fucked up stuff, you know, and. Yeah, and that's the thing, man. It just kind of sticks with you. It'll never go away. And it's good you found that. That's what another thing too is like with the VA. And are you getting benefits and stuff like that? Or that's cool.
Yeah, that's you know, like when you're getting out. Well, it's different for you because you're retired.
Yeah,
but like you know, for me, like you know, I was supposed to do 4 years, but I ended up doing a little over five because of the stop loss. But you know, you do the 5 years. And then you get out and, you know, you use your GI Bill. This and that. So when you're clearing, you have to meet with some guys from the reserves. Then you got to go meet with some guys from the National Guard. And they both pretty much gave you the same pitch. Like, we'll put you at pretty much any unit you want. Yeah. We'll bump you up a promotion. You don't have to go to the board, so you'll be in E6 and this and that. And, you know, you might as well just sign up with us because you're going to get called back in anyway because of, you know, the contract. And
sure, no matter what, you're
for the next so many years, you're in active ready reserve. Yeah. So they can call you back in. So, but the thing is, when they called me, they could not pull me back in. So here's how the phone call went. Yeah, I'm looking for Sergeant Byrne. Yeah, this was Sergeant Byrne. And he goes, yeah, this is Staff Sergeant, whatever his name is.
I like it. This was Staff Sergeant.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what I said to him. And he goes, so I have some orders for you here that you have to be at the one in Kentucky, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Kentucky.
And it's like Fort Campbell or something like that?
I'm not sure. But he tells me, like, I got to be there, like, October, blah, 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 of this year. And I just said, yeah, that's not going to happen, Sergeant.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you do know that if you don't show up, you're going to be considered AWOL and this and this and this. And I go, yeah, that's not going to happen either, Sergeant.
Yeah.
He goes, okay, Sergeant Byrne, enlighten me. Why is that not going to happen? And I go, well, because according to the Department of Veteran Affairs, I'm 40% disabled and 30% of that is due to PTSD. He goes, okay, thank you. You have a good day and we will not contact you again about this. And I was like, thank you. And I hung up, never got a call. And then danced a jig the day I got... that little guy right there, the discharge, the honorable discharge in the mail. It's behind this.
Oh, so you okay. Really,
but yeah.
He's got his.
I got my honorable discharge.
It's not a 214. It's literally a fucking discharge.
An honorable discharge certificate.
Hell yeah, man.
The U.S. Army. When I got that thing in the mail, I didn't know what it was. I just got this 8x10 envelope from the Army. And, you know, I was just like, okay. I opened it up. I saw what it was. And I danced a little happy dance.
That's like freedom. I got a cool picture of me and my
literally, 214. It was like George Michael was singing to me, freedom.
I was going with the one from Woodstock, but yeah, that either one, either freedom song.
I gotta give it to George Michael. Come on, Wham, Wham. I don't think I need to say anything more than Wham.
No, that's good, man. Fucking yeah. For us, it was like for me, I should say, not us, but. For me, like, oh, and advice for anybody that's separating or getting out. If they're old like us, like you and I, because we actually had a physical medical record, because now they're all electronic. Everything's all electronic. But if you still have a partial medical record, copy it and make it one-sided and pretend like some asshole's really pissed off that the world is the guy scanning all your documents. And then separate your mental health from your regular physical health, because... That's what's going to determine, like, they'll break it down and then they look at it somewhere else. And that helps determine which ones you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I filed my paperwork May 2016, May, this current May 2016. And then I had to wait August or July 31st is my actual last day. I was on terminal leave for a long fucking time.
Right.
So July 31st was my last official day in Navy. August 2nd through the 4th, I had to see go to three different places. One was in Canoga Park, and the other one was Culver City, and the third one was Glendale, over by Top Rocker, mm-hmm. Harley Davidson, like Caddy Corner. And then I had those three, and then one more week later, I had to do another hearing test and an optical test in Santa Barbara. So there was all my shit knocked out, boom. I was getting paid September 29th, bro. So I was like, fuck yeah, 90% disabled.
Jeez.
So yeah, they're like, because it's just like, I'm fucked up, you know, I'm PTSD. My hips are fucked up, my shoulders, stuff I shouldn't be, stuff I should be getting fucking paid for, I'm not. Mm-hmm. So it's at zeros. So I'm thinking about going, because I don't know who to talk to yet, but I'm going to fucking appeal it because... I should probably go for the jugular as 100 because there's shit on there that I'm not getting that I'm like, how do you rate me at 0%
for what I'm fucked up on? Yeah, you'd have to go the one that's on the other side. Like if you go to the Wilshire one,
yeah. Okay,
you got all the doctors and medical offices on this side. And then on the other side is all the business offices. You got to go to that side.
Yeah. I still need it. So it's the one off Wilshire then?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the main offices are. That's where you'd have to go. I wasn't going there to appeal anything, but I was going there to pick up some other paperwork. And it was funny because all these people were in the room I was in. Yeah. It was all the people like that have been coming in for years, like every couple months with the same paperwork or whatever. And, you know, just waiting. And I get in there, and I had called ahead of time to tell them what I needed, and they were like, yeah, that's no problem.
Right.
So I came down, and I took a number, and I waited for them to call me, and I go up, and I go to the counter, and I'm like, yeah, I came to pick up this and this. And she goes, okay, yeah, just go have a seat. It's like, no problem. No. I didn't have anything to do, so I wasn't worried about it. And I sit down next to this guy, and he's like, you just walk in? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, good luck. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can kind of see that. And yeah. Literally, about 2 minutes go by, and she's like, Mr. Byrne? I'm like, yeah. She's like, here you go. I'm like, okay, I'll see you later. And I go and I grab my paper, and he's like, what the fuck,
man?
Like, well, I'm not here. I don't have to talk to anyone. Like, I just had to physically come here for them to print it up and give it to, because apparently for some reason they couldn't, like, email it to me or something. Yeah. So I just had to physically go on. Literally, she just, like, pulled it up, print, like, four copies of this one. Here you go. Thank you. Have a good one. Mic drop.
I'm yeah, out. Yeah. They call you and say, hey, these are where you got to be, and then they fucking mail you shit and mail them. Then they pay you to fucking go for your mileage, and I thought that was cool.
Right.
Like, get the fuck out. You paid. I got a check from you guys already just for showing up. And at the time, I was in Port Hueneme, so I got like a $30 check here, a $20 check here, a $30 check here
for driving
all the way down here.
For a while when I got out, I don't know what it was, but every once in a while, I was just getting a check from the government. There would be no letter telling me what it was for or anything, but like I would just, and it was always like at the perfect time. Like, rent's due, I got 2 days left, I'm freaking out, I'm like, how am I going to raise the rest of this rent money? And then out of nowhere, this check would show up.
Uncle like, Sam, oh, literally.
Yeah, what? That's rent.
The crazy Uncle Sam.
Yeah, my rich uncle that used to send me around to shitty parts of the world.
Do you ever get back in touch with some of the old guys, man?
Yeah, I talk to him here and there. There's quite a few I keep in touch with. I got a buddy down in San Diego I talk to a lot. I got another buddy in Texas. My buddy in Colorado. He wasn't in my platoon, but he was in my unit. And we were real tight. Peterson. And he was actually, him and the guy actually all three of these guys have been guests on Military Moments.
Oh, that's fucking cool.
John Hoffman, Matt Bradford, and Russell Peterson. Not Russell Peters.
Well, that's the next question. Everybody's like, Russell Peters?
When I called the studio and I told them, it's going to be Russell Peterson, I got to the studio and they had written down Russell, and they were all excited and they had written down Russell Peters. I'm like, no, not Russell Peters. I'm sorry to.
Dude, I'm sorry,
y'all are excited and this isn't happening, but no, it's not Russell
Peters. It's like one of those things where they open up the door and they're like looking back and forth. What was
really funny is at that point I hadn't met Russell Peters yet. And then my brother was doing this pilot that it didn't go off, but he was doing this pilot, and Russell Peters was going to be one of the guests on it. Callan was there as well, and Brian Callan.
Brian, yeah.
Yeah, and so I walk in, and I'm sitting in the audience, and Russell Peters walks, they're all up on the set, you know. And he looks down and he goes, look, Steve, there's another half Asian. Look, right there. And Steve's like, yeah, I know. He's like, dude, right there. He's like, that's my brother. He's like, wait, what the? And he's like, looking back. He's like, oh my God.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, yeah. That's like the job I'm working now. They figured it out. There's some of them, it took them a couple of days to figure it out.
So what did you do since you've been out then? I mean, we talk about Military Moments, which we'll touch on that real quick. That's going to be cool, you know?
Yeah, of course. We could touch on Military Moments. Military Moments is the podcast I started, that was a while ago. It's been off for about a year now.
Yeah, well, it's more. A little bit, well, I think probably about, yeah, ballpark year, because
yeah,
I did like one of the last few.
You did like 55 and 57.
Yeah.
And I think like 58 was the last one, which are available on iTunes and all that other good stuff, podcast app. Basically, I started it as a program to, like, help soldiers and veterans like myself that have any kind of issues. And basically what it was I would have guests on who are either veterans or entertainers who have done USO.
Yeah.
And or, if I can, active soldiers. And if it's an actual soldier or veteran, that's one of the big things I talk to them is about that transition of going from a soldier to a civilian. And how they dealt with that. And we always like to talk about a group or a program towards the end of each episode that's designed to help, like, Wounded Warrior Project, stuff like that.
Right.
Just a different one each time. One of my favorite ones was one that provided service animals to veterans with PTSD.
Yeah.
Just a lot of amazing programs out there. So, like, I mean, even if you're not comfortable going in and talking to someone at the VA or something, there's all kinds of programs you can find online that just are specifically designed to help you deal with whatever you're going through.
And that was cool, too, because you let me plug Sloth, Sean's Last Opportunity to Help, which was one of my best friends. He was a comic, also a gunner for the Air Force. We won't hold that against them. Oh, he's kind of dead, so fuck him, right? No, I'm just kidding. Sean's always been, like, was, like, one of my best friends, and he killed himself. And it's Rick Bruner, who runs the Virginia Beach Funny Bone, his manager up there, and then two of his brothers and about five of the comics that, and including myself, and put together benefit shows to raise, you know, money for awareness for PTSD and depression, and, you know, try to eliminate the stigma, because everybody thinks that, you know, your life is over if you go to get help. We're wrestling your dog at the time. It's funny.
It's a little distracting.
They got the dog. We're fucking. He's like, yeah.
He's like, he definitely wants to be paid attention to.
Yeah, it's like, start talking about Sean and he possessed your dog.
Oh. Oh, he'll get noisy if we let him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll try not to do that.
We've been trying. I think that's been the struggle this whole
time. Oh, shit. It's funny, though. He wants some loving, dude.
He's a fun little guy.
But, yeah, and then, all right, so Military Moments, that was fun. I'm
glad
Military
Military Moments, it was great. I love doing it. I can't wait to start doing it again. Yeah. I got a lot of good words on it. A lot of people told me how much they liked it. I was really pleased. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to bringing that back.
What else were you doing as a civilian?
Yeah, first I got out, I was working at that Army-Navy store, and then I started going to school at LAVC, Los Angeles Valley Community College, and eventually, after so many semesters, I circled around to acting. I started majoring in acting, did a bunch of plays, did some directing projects. I was in a couple of short films that students had done. And then when I was just about done with all the acting classes and stuff available, and it was just kind of all I really needed is those other classes, the electives to graduate. When I would have been going into that, I got a call from my brother Steve, who had created and was starring in the show Sullivan and Son at the time.
Right.
And so basically I pretty much finished out the school year. And a couple days later, went to work as his stand-in on Sullivan and Son. And I did that for one season. Then I stood in on another show that never made it to air called Friend Me for a season. By the time I finished that, Sullivan and Son came back for the second season. So I stood in again for that season. Then I was doing background work on Parks and Recreation.
Oh, cool.
I did that, and then Sullivan and Son third season came. At that point, I just kind of didn't want to be a stand-in.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like 3 days, I'm just literally sitting there. I'm very lazy, and I don't like that. I have to be able to move around.
For people that aren't savvy, what's a stand-in do?
Okay, for those of you don't... So a stand-in, basically, any television show or movie, whatever, you know, there's the actors, then there's the lighting guys, camera guys, whatever. So what a stand-in does is watches the actor's rehearsal, and then marks down where they go, like if they move from one spot to another, you kind of make a note of that. And what line did they move on?
Yeah.
So basically the purpose for that is when the lighting guys and the camera guys are getting set, the actors are too important to deal with these minute details.
Yeah.
So they will go and take a break, and you will basically go through the same rehearsal as one of the actors. And you will stand on a mark, and then when it comes to that line, you'll move to their other mark. That way, the cameras know which way to go on what line, and they got the lighting right and everything like that. And the sound guys and stuff like that, they know where they got to move the microphone on any given line.
Yeah, because most people, when they hear stand-in, they automatically think extra.
Right, that's right. Like, no, well, yeah, that's background. That's the other part of it, too. That's what I did on Parks and Recreation. Yeah, yeah. That was background.
Yeah. So, because, it's weird, because we talk about, you talk about the military to civilian, you're like, oh, yeah, man, you got to take the OE-254, and you get your Anger 39, it's attached to it, it's the one, and then we have the 119 that goes to the J-Box, and everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about,
right.
But it's kind of like, that's talking Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah. It is, it's very similar. So, yeah, I was, that third season, I didn't want to do it anymore.
Right.
And so I said, can I do something different? And so I was a set PA, which I just pretty much had to deal with everyone. And my brother's just an incredibly nice guy. So whenever certain guests or friends, or even, not even his, like other cast members, friends and family would come in.
Yeah.
And so part of my job became being, getting in touch with the Warner Brothers tour department. And getting tours set up for these people so that, when we're just rehearsing and stuff, they can go on a tour and then come back, have dinner, and watch the show when it goes up.
That's fucking cool.
And all kinds of stuff like that. But basically, it was like, a lot of it was like making copies, making sure everyone has the most current script, making sure everyone has what they need, stuff like that. Keeping things quiet on different parts of set. It's a lot of running around. So I did that. And then, unfortunately, Sullivan and Son got canceled after the third season. At that point, I wasn't really getting work on any more shows.
Right.
So I went to work in a restaurant for a while. And then I was cooking there. And then I went and started studying. And I got my security guard card. And I was doing security for about a year and a half at a school in Century City. And I kind of just quit that. And right now I'm working as a key grip and gaffer on a Hallmark movie.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So I can't tell you the name, but you probably won't see it.
when you went to those schools, though, you had the acting school and all that other stuff. And did the VA help? Or did you get
I did it all on my GI Bill.
GI Bill?
Yeah, fuck I did yeah, all man. That on my GI
so
Bill.
So it is possible to use GI Bill, not just on a regular
Well,
class.
I think... If you're going to use it for, acting classes, I think the catch is that it has to be, at an actual college.
Right.
Like, you can't go down the street here to the actor's boot camp.
Yeah, you can't go to the UCB and be like, hey, guys,
I did three levels at Improv Olympics.
Right.
And, there's no way I could have used my GI Bill for that.
Yeah, and that's, I really like the pushers. These guys and... Virginia Beach, they were part of the UCB in New York, and then they came to Virginia Beach, and then they restarted, their own thing, and that's what, it's not like college where you can just take your, I got improv, 101 or 301, and, sketch 301, but I can't just, take these credits and enroll them from, it's not like you're going from Ohio State to Michigan.
Right.
Did I just create a rivalry there? you can't just go from one school to the other with it.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, man, I mean, I loved acting classes, but honestly, I loved improv a bit more.
Right, yeah.
it's a lot more freedom, of course, so you're not sticking to a script, but you're also, you're making it up as you go along, which is also very difficult to make it up as you go along, yet keep it entertaining, because, I mean, when it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's painful. It's
definitely fucking...
It's, sometimes, there's always that one, in the class that just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And it's always, there's two thoughts that go through your head. One, this is so painful to watch. Two, I feel so bad for you. You're the partner that has to work the other side of that team,
I had fun with improv, but I think wherever you start's where you want to stick with. It's kind of like being a fan of your home team. I'm always going to be a Red Wings fan because I grew up in that geographical area, and that's the thing. And
right.
If I started off as a stand-up, and then I started doing improv classes later on, which I have fun. I like improv.
But you went back
fun,
to the home team.
But I'm always going to be, at heart, just a stand-up comic.
Right.
That went the other way. And I think it's probably the same for improv guys that do stand-up. I'm an improv guy, but I did a couple stand-up.
And the thing is, I know a few that are good at both. Gareth Reynolds.
Yeah.
He went and started doing stand-up. Amazing.
Fucking,
doing amazing with it.
Robin Williams,
it's a lot of, it's one or the other. Because they are two completely different things. Whereas, either way, you're making it up yourself.
Right.
But as a comic, you gotta, and that's just as hard, because you gotta write the jokes, then you gotta go try them out at this spot, try them out at this spot, see whether it's gonna work or not, or if it only appeals to certain people, you know?
I think tying the military lifestyle into this is awesome, because how many times did you go to the range and you're like, this is fucking stupid. Why are we here again?
Right.
You're just here like fucking before, but you start popping, you know, it just went to muscle memory.
Yeah.
Your rifle went right into the same shoulder pocket, and you're like, and then you just, you know, literally, you got in the pocket, you know, with your rifle, or if you're on stage, and you got in your pocket because you did your set, and you understand your set, and it flows so fucking smooth, and I think a lot of the military stuff, it carries over, and that's a plus that carries in the civilian world, man. You got anything going on you want to plug or anything like that?
Not currently.
Yeah.
Not currently. I wish it was the opposite. I wish I had 100 things to plug, but unfortunately, no. It's a little slow for this guy right now.
Well, yeah, I got irons in the fire, but I can't talk about them. It's kind of like your Hallmark movie.
What I should have said. You know, like, that would have been a much better answer. It's like, well, I got some things going on, but I can't really talk about it for legal reasons. But yeah.
Hey, do you got anything you want to plug?
No. All right. Reset button. Let's go.
Yeah, reset button. Do you got anything you want to plug?
Well, I do have some irons in the fire. Unfortunately, I can't talk about them yet.
Oh, good answer. I feel the same way you
do. So well done. No, I literally have an iron in my fireplace. They're branding me later.
Yeah, we're going to put it on your dog because he's, you know. That way you know it's yours.
Oh, yeah, because we want him to be more hyper.
Yeah, it's like burn. Like, we're going to make the dog burn. Like, literally. You're Korean, man. I heard about those barbecues you have over
Joshua there. Bryan's radio show does not in any way condone the burning of animals.
Yeah. Thanks for this. Goddamn right, man. There's a little moments at any time, especially when Joshua Bryan and will burn are together in any place whatsoever. We're not condone animal cruelty or anything, but we will make fun of them and crippled people.
Yeah, I will. I really will.
Shit. Well, I guess that's about it, man. Anything else? Nothing? Good?
No.
Fucking, we got some cool shit. We got two projects we're not even going to talk about, but we'll just leave a teaser out there. We got two projects. I guess the one with Military Moments.
We already talked about it.
And then there's this other one. If it happens, you guys will be like, oh, yeah, I remember you guys talking about it. And if it doesn't happen, who gives a shit, right?
Exactly.
You guys will forget about that we've even talked about it.
And so why even bring it up?
Let's not bring it up.
Like, we won't.
Well, we won't.
That's why we're not.
Yeah, we're not.
No. Lips are sealed on that one.
That's it. Fuck it.
That's all you get.
Goddamn
You get a glimmer of hope that you might hear what it's about.
Oh, that's it. Well, it's about... guys. So once again, man, this will conclude this episode. Mm-hmm. I just want to say thanks to... thanks to everybody that all the leaders I followed, and for making me a better leader. And thanks for everybody I've led. You made me a better person. Have a great day, and if not, go fuck yourself.